Yes, this is Sterling Allen with Free Energy Now. Thanks for joining us. We have our guest this week talking about hydrogen boost technology, Mark Miles with Get Hydro Power. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Mark, you have a technology that is referred to as hydrogen boost, in which you have a high-efficiency electrolyzing unit on board that produces hydrogen on the fly, and you are getting efficiencies that are way up there. Let's talk about your Get Hydrogen Power technology.
All right. Where do we want to begin?
Well, first of all, what kind of efficiency in terms of mileage improvements are we talking about?
Well, right now, with the model that I'm currently running under our prototypes, we're running about 35%. The models that we will have for prototypes next week, we're projecting to be closer to 50 to 100.
So somebody puts one of these units on their vehicle, and you're talking about fleet types of situations, right?
Yes, if we're we have a number of different kinds of units that are coming out over the next 90 days. One unit is only a 10-cell unit that would go in vehicles that have a 3.0 liter or less. We have some that will be coming out next spring for motorcycles. We have others that are going for the 4.0 and up in the one-ton truck market that are a 20-cell unit. And then we have units that are going for semis that will be up to 100 cells.
Okay. So the 10-cell unit that is coming out next or just in a few days here, what's that one going to be about?
Actually, that one will be the 20-cell unit. The 20-cell unit will be for the vehicles that have a 4.0 liter engine or 3.0 liter engine or higher into a one-ton diesel or gasoline truck. That unit is projected, the current unit that we have is running at simply a 35% increase in mileage. However, our new wiring schematics have put us in where we are able to produce a greater volume of hydrogen over a much shorter period of time using slightly more amperage, but just a different wiring configuration. So we'll be using about 25 amps of your vehicle's power, and with that we should be able to get to between 50 and 100. Right now we're only using 11, and we're getting a 35.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were saying that this 20-cell situation is producing in the region of the equivalent of 1 ton of TNT for every 5 minutes of usage. Is that correct?
It's actually about one stick of dynamite every 5 seconds. We are producing more energy with less amperage than anyone that we've ever found that has filed for patent on anything, that has ever claimed to have accomplished anything with hydrogen separation, which there are a number of very credible, publicly traded companies that have done this and spent millions of dollars getting there. We have redesigned a wiring configuration, whereas we're taking the 20 cells, running our amperage through there, and the electrolyte balance is extremely critical, that it has to be the exact percentage that we've set up so that you can extract the maximum amount of hydrogen and oxygen out of water in the shortest amount of period using the least amount of energy.
How would your unit compare to, say, this hydrogen technology applications that has been getting quite a bit of circulation? They have this Fox 24 feature on them recently. They basically have Brown's gas that they're running into the air oxygen intake on a vehicle and getting substantial increase in mileage.
Yes, we are still running the Brown's gas. We are still pulling it into the engine. Most of the units that are out there are using 20 amps in a single cell. We've divided the 20 amps appropriately. Again, it's a very complex situation to be able to run the right amount of electrolyte balance and the amount of surface area on each plate without running your amperage over to where the point where you're generating too excessive amount of heat or drawing too many amps to get the amount of hydrogen that you're looking out of it. But we are looking at the same kind of technology that many of these companies are looking at. There is a lot of companies that are currently starting to come out with some really exciting technologies. The nice thing is that what we've seen thus far is the best company that I have seen out there can't produce more than 20% of what we've been able to accomplish out of our units for money that is generally about 2 to 3 times in excess of what we're looking at for market.
What is the cost of your unit?
The costs of the units will depend on the size of the vehicle and how many cells. The 20-unit electrolyzer is called the Gorilla, and that's going to be introduced at about $1,900 each. The Chimp, which is for the smaller vehicles, that one is going to be running at about $1,500 a unit. The semi-units, which are going to be up to 100 cells, can be around $10,000. On the semi-units, we're looking at being able to increase the amount of mileage in a semi by close to 100%.
Is that going to be going into the air intake, or are you going into a injection system there?
Actually, we are pulling it in under a vacuum. We created a vacuum situation, so we're drawing it in very rapidly into the manifold system.
Okay. You describe a with this price of let's say, for example, with the Chimp, $1,500. What kind of return on investment are we talking about?
Well, we're looking at about $1 a gallon, $1 to $1.25 per gallon, whatever you've normally been fueling up at. If you've been getting in a 3.0 liter, you're generally going to be getting around 30 miles to the gallon or better. So we should be able to increase your mileage to, say, 40, 45 in that area with that unit. So about a 35% savings.
So in practice, what kind of, how long is it going to take to pay for the unit?
Well, it depends on how many miles you're driving every day. I'll give you a couple of examples here. I purchased a very nice computer monitoring system for my truck. As I'm driving to work, I can see exactly where I'm accelerating, decelerating, what I'm getting for mileage under acceleration, going up hills, going down hills, etc. As I'm monitoring this, you're beginning to learn a lot more about how your vehicle is operating, and you're seeing the improvements in the yield of your mileage as you're continually driving your vehicle. The reason that we have is that there's a kind of a hydrogen phenomenon, which it takes some time for your computers to learn how to adapt to the new input. Hydrogen is generally going to expand the fuel within your cell and make it burn at 4,000 degrees instead of 5,000 degrees, and including when you're injecting oxygen with it, it will actually combust under pressure instead of a spark or ignition source. So you're getting a better burn of the existing gasoline that you have. Now, in some of the best vehicles that you have out there, in the small vehicles with 3.0 liter or less, they can be running as close to 50% success of burn rate of your gasoline. Example, I guess, or trying to explain this in a better way. Gasoline, at best, only half of it actually burns in your cylinder. The rest of it burns off in your catalytic converter. So you're wasting about half of that fuel. Why? Because there isn't sufficient oxygen and there isn't sufficient hydrogen to make a proper combustion. Now, your vehicle over time begins to learn. Your computer begins to adjust to to this new input. And as you're seeing this, say like in the last 2 days, I've been driving back and forth to work. It's a 15-mile trip. As I'm going to work the first day, I got on a vehicle that I'm normally getting 14 to 15 miles to gallon on. I got about 18 and a half. I disconnected my computer. How you disconnect your computer, you simply take off your positively charged post off of your battery and leave it set off for a few seconds.
You're disconnecting a positive lead for a few seconds.
Yes, to reset the computer. Now, my computer had already learned how to run under hydrogen, so I was getting 23 and a half on a vehicle that was getting 14, 15 miles a gallon normally.
Mm-hmm.
So I disconnected it so that it would have to relearn this input. Okay, it's a Ford, so Fords take quite some time to relearn the input. So as I put this back on, and I'm driving down the road with it, the first trip that I'm getting, I got about 18 and a half. On the way home, I got about 19. Then the next day going back, it picked up at 20. And then it came back, and it was 20.2. Well, as I'm going back and forth, this vehicle is learning how to deal with the new input on the hydrogen, and it will get better and better. So it will depend on the make and model of your vehicle and how your computer operates as to how fast your savings will occur. Now, normally a Ford will take about 300 miles to begin to adjust sufficiently, and I've only driven with that computer installed after I disconnected the battery for less than 100 miles. It's been 75 miles, I believe it is now. So within 300, I should be getting close to about 40 or 45% off of using only 11 or 12 amps of power.
We do have a caller who has a question for you. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, my name is Don. I'm in Florida. I built a hydroxy unit for use on my automobile, but are you including the EFI unit, which is the in-between that fools the engine's fueling computer so that the extra oxygen that the O2 sensors are picking up, it doesn't try and compensate for that and actually make the fueling richer?
I could barely understand what he was saying. Could you repeat some of this?
Okay.
He's asking if you're using an EFI unit. Is that available from the Eagle Research up in Penticton?
Well, that's you can build your own, or, George Weissman from Eagle Research, he says he has one available as well.
I would love to get his information to see about incorporating this into the unit to make it work faster on getting that information back. When we're injecting this and the extra oxygen, it's actually making the truck. Yes, it does seem to burn some richer. Here's what's occurred.
Well, I already know what occurs because I've built one and I'm using it in my car, so I understand exactly what you're talking about. But at the same time, if you're going to put a unit like yours in a vehicle with a electronic fuel injection and fuel injectors, then the O2 sensors are going to be reading a lot more oxygen in the exhaust stream, and the engine's fueling computer is going to want to change the settings to become more rich because it will think that the engine is running lean. So unless you're offering some device that goes in between the O2 sensors and the engine's computer, you're actually going to decrease your mileage.
I understand what you're saying. And what I have seen is exactly the same thing if your driving patterns are staying the same. What has happened with the vehicles that we've been putting this on is you are not able to put your foot on the accelerator anywhere to the level that you used to be able to do that with. Right now, my vehicle, the little problem I'm having with my own vehicle is that I can barely touch the accelerator and I have to take my foot off the accelerator for 30 to 60 seconds because I'm constantly going faster than legally permitted.
Yes.
I have more energy, and I'm getting a tremendous increase in mileage. I cannot drive like I used to drive. I have to take my foot off the accelerator. I cannot take off. If I take off from a, I have a Ford Sport Track.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if you're familiar with those at all, this one especially is the gutless wonder. So a little child on a tricycle could generally beat me off the line on a stoplight. So now when I'm accelerating, if I'm coming through a stoplight, if I put my foot anywhere near to where I used to, I am laying rubber. So I have to be very cautious about how I'm driving my vehicle. I can barely touch my accelerator.
There is definitely a power increase, but this truck that you've got this device on, does it have O2 sensors on it so that you're getting feedback and it's adjusting the fueling, or is this a carbureted automobile without O2 sensors?
No, it definitely has the O2 sensors. It's a 2001 Ford Sportrack, 4.0 liter.
I am getting a power increase as well. However, I've had to use these EFI devices, which basically send a little bit more voltage to the fueling computer so that it doesn't try to richen the mixture to compensate for the extra oxygen that is now in the exhaust stream.
Well,
that is an extremely good observation. I have been struggling with the fact that any vehicle that we put this on, we have had definite acceleration problems. You cannot simply put your foot on the accelerator as you used to. You have to be very, very careful about it because you're getting so much more power and so much more energy that you're either burning rubber or you're driving carelessly or you're driving too fast. Again, I'm sitting in traffic or in a speed in the mornings when you're going through in normal traffic, I have my foot off the accelerator more than I have it on.
Yeah. Well,
and this sensor might exactly be what I'm looking for.
That might be part of the reason that you're feeling a power increase is your engine's fuel computer may be richening the fuel mixture to compensate for the extra O2 that it's reading in the exhaust stream. So not only are you getting the added benefit of the hydroxy combining with the fuel to make it more powerful, but your engine is injecting more fuel into the mixture, which will also make it more powerful. And I just don't understand how you're still getting better mileage on top of that without altering the signals coming from the O2 sensors.
Well, here's the simple explanation of that. As I'm driving, most of the time, I'm totally unable to exceed 2,000 RPM because I am grossly past anything that's reasonable for speed at that point. So I have to try and keep my engine around 1,300 RPM, where normally, under normal circumstances, to get my car to drive that fast in traffic was around 2,500.
Okay.
So I'm using far less accelerator, of course, which then is providing less fuel input. As I take my foot off the accelerator of this vehicle, I have to start braking because I can't control the amount of energy that's going through this engine anymore without a brake.
The only thing I find interesting, though, is that if this is a more modern vehicle, I would think that you'd have a transmission with a lock-up torque converter. So your RPM should be directly related to your vehicle's speed. You should not have different engine RPM for different highway speeds. And once the torque converter is locked up, you're in a constant drive line. There's no slip. And that should be a constant thing. Now, where your pedal position is in relation to how much foot speed you're giving it in compared to your speed, yes, there will be a difference there. But your engine RPM should still be the same for what speed you're going, at least if you've got a transmission, an automatic transmission with a lock-up torque converter, or, of course, a manual transmission where you'd have the same thing.
Yes, as you're accelerating, if I was to accelerate and want to get to the speed limit of 60, let's say, my torque converter or my RPMs are going to be what I normally am to get there. However, as soon as I'm there, I have to take my foot off the accelerator because I'll continue to surpass that. I'm incapable of actually slowing the vehicle down without completely removing my foot off the accelerator.
I'd like to ask.
Now, we've had that happen with a Dodge diesel truck also, where we were normally getting 7 miles to the gallon pulling a trailer, and it's a normal routine trip for this man. And we went to 11 miles to the gallon, and he was constantly pulling his foot off the accelerator and having to coast.
I'd like to ask if you plan on getting some independent testing on this product before you are putting it on the market.
Yes, we're talking to a research firm right now to have them identify exactly, independently, how much we're actually pulling into the engine and how this is affecting engine performance. I know that without a doubt we have increased our horsepower enormously with a lower RPM. Now, as you're getting up to those speeds and so forth, yes, all that makes sense, but it continually maintains those speeds for a much longer time after you've removed the energy input of the accelerator.
How do you plan on marketing the device?
Simply, at this point, we're going out. We know I have a number of other corporations that I own, and we're going to our existing clientele that have large fleets, and they're putting it into their vehicles to test it out and see how they like it. So initially, that'll be pretty much about all we're doing. We have our website presence. We aren't doing any marketing at all, and we're just going through our existing clientele base where they're going to test it out, see if they like it, give us feedback, what they like, what they don't like, and also, of course, then we're going to get our independent studies on exactly what do we have to do. Now, like this sensor that he's talking about, I'm extremely keen on learning more about that, because that is what we've already identified as our major problem, is we cannot really harness all the energy that we're throwing at the engine.
Yeah, the hydroxy gas works extremely well in a diesel, because not only do you have the extra power that you're seeing, but also I believe it burns cleaner, there'll be less smoke, and your oil should stay cleaner longer too, because you're using up more of the carbon in the fuel. So it's got multiple advantages other than increased power and increased mileage in the diesel.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yes, in my own vehicle, this vehicle has always smelled like sulfur. Whenever you turn it off and you leave it in your garage, it's nauseating. It smells like rotten eggs as soon as you walk out into the garage a half hour later. Now, since we've been doing this for the last, I've been running in this vehicle with various prototypes for the last 90 days. The first thing I noticed was in this vehicle is that the amount of sulfur that I was smelling after the vehicle was turned off was minimal, and now it's nothing. And now you can't even smell the exhaust as you're standing right next to the exhaust.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Well, so on the diesel vehicles, I have a fleet of my own trucks in another corporation that I own, and in that fleet of vehicles, we're going to be putting them through all of that, and that is generally that we've been running biodiesel in that.
Sure.
And of course, those vehicles smell.
Yeah.
And what I noticed with one of the diesel trucks that's constantly doing the same run, and that's another friend of mine that owns a business that where he has to haul the same amount of product to the same place all the time.
Yeah.
Right away, of course, he was noticing that I cannot keep my foot on the accelerator. And when he was all done, when he came back, then the smell of the diesel was grossly diminished.
Yeah.
So it improved even the smell out of the diesel vehicle.
Will you also be offering your unit as a water torch for, I know jewelers use the hydroxy gas for repairing rings and other repair work on jewelry, and apparently it works quite well for joining, infusing different metals together without the use of flux.
Yes, we've been looking at that for our own application. I actually own a metal fabrication business also. But it's not something that we've been offering or we're considering to offer out on the market. Right now there's a couple of companies that have some very nice water torches.
Yep.
And I believe they're running about $5,000.
Yep.
And they seem to be like just extremely high-quality units. And what I'm trying to mainly focus on for our efforts is the automotive. Mm-hmm. Plus, then we're moving into residential and into home applications.
Yes. What kind of material are you using for your electroplate?
What we're using is a stainless steel plate.
Okay. Yeah, I'm using a combination of copper for the negative or the cathode and stainless steel for the anode or the positive.
And are you noticing that the copper is degrading rapidly?
No, not at all. I'm using potassium hydroxide as the electrolyte.
Okay, yes, that's good.
Are you guys using any electrolyte in your solution?
Oh, absolutely. The balance of the electrolyte compared to spacing, plates, stainless grade, everything is extremely critical in the yield that we're getting. We can't use copper because we cannot come up with the same consistency. We'll actually just wear the copper out. It'll start to tarnish, or it'll fill a film on there, and then we'll start to drop our production rates real rapidly. The units that we have, we can run for, you know, thousands of hours and have no problems at all in building up any kind of residue on the surface or causing any degradation in its yield.
Well, I conditioned. I'm using tubing in my unit, and during the assembly process, I use emery cloth to crosshatch the exterior of the surfaces, and then some of it I also sandblasted to increase the surface area. And the only thing I've noticed is that the copper develops a very, it looks like it's a black finish, but it looks like anodized aluminum. It's a very fine, of course, I use very fine etching techniques on the copper as well, but I haven't noticed any degradation. But, of course, I'm using the copper for the hydrogen, not the oxygen. I think if it was the other way around, the oxygen would eat the copper away pretty fast.
Yes.
But everything
we've actually developed a way of using one when we're using 40 when we're using 20 cells, we actually use 40 surfaces doing different functions for us off the same plate.
You're using probably a series style design. Mine is also a series type, but I've got it divided into 7 cells. So you're dividing 13.8 volts in the average automobile voltage system level divided by 7, and that brings you close to the optimum for Faraday production. And now I want to boost the output by means of electronics, and that's probably what you're using on your unit as well. And there's a somewhere around 45 kilohertz, and then 90% duty cycle, and a square wave. Excuse me. It's the electronics that I found are really going to make the thing fly.
Yeah, it's both electronics and electrolyte balance. Spacings. There's a number of factors that people, as a general rule, have been overlooking as being extremely critical. And when you match all of them up and basically align the planets, the yield is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. Within the next week, you'll be able to go onto our website and take a look at the video of what we're getting out of our yield. It'll absolutely amaze you.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that because I belong to several internet groups and been watching and gathering a lot of information on the internet, and I built a few cells previously and didn't have very much luck with it, and now finally I'm starting to get some meaningful production, but I look forward to seeing your device.
Now, just for the sake of the audience, the website is gethydropower.com. We'll be able to go there. And are you going to go live with that site today?
Well, we were trying to go live today, but one of my programmers has had a little personal issue, so then we can't do it today. We're trying to get it out there before Monday night is our goal now.
That sounds good.
Okay. And I'm curious, what kind of patents are you going for? Do you have on this process?
Well, what we're going to be applying for on this process is simply the electronic division, basically. How we've been able to accomplish hydrogen has been being used and extracted for well over 100 years. Now, the yield that we're getting off of the amount of amperes and the voltage that we're putting at it is, well, it's generally been grossly underutilized. That's where we came in with basically aligning the planets, coming in with the exact spacing, the exact electrolyte balance, and the exact amount of amperage that's needed per square inch of that surface material that we're using, and then using both sides of our plates and providing within each cell four separation processes, which gets an extreme amount of action. Now, I believe I emailed you the video of that, and you saw what we were actually extracting out of that, and what we're doing, what we also do, is that we're putting it into a clear acrylic containment unit so that you can actually observe exactly what's going on every plate all the way through.
Yes, well, you've got a series-style setup, so you're maximizing your play area. So
absolutely.
Yeah, so on one side of the plate, you're going to have a minus, and then the other side, you're going to have a plus, and you just
That's
go
right.
on.
And then we're running a combination of series and parallel setups within the same unit.
Yep, and then what are you using now? Commonly, potassium hydroxide, KOH, is what's used as the electrolyte at a 28% mixture strength.
Yes.
Is that what you're using as well, or are you using sodium hydroxide?
Oh, no, not sodium. No, we're using the potassium.
Okay.
And it's at a different percentage than you're used to using. That's part of what we're going to be applying for patents on, because the plate spacing and that electrolyte balance is actually different than commonly perceived.
Okay.
Well, and that's why we're getting the much higher yield out of it.
Yeah, if your electronics are that good, then that's what allows you to do that, because, of course, you know the plain the holy grail is no electrolyte at all.
But yes, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
Because the potassium hydroxide is rather brutal if you get it on yourself without having gloves.
Yeah, you definitely want to be careful mixing it and using it in the solution, but it does wonders for the process.
Yes.
So
what kind of maintenance of the product would there be?
Well, on our unit, what we're trying to make it so that there's a very minuscule maintenance. It's not something that you can go out and mix your own and, you know, kind of figure out, oh, yes, well, I might have this much potassium left in the solution when it gets down to a certain level, and then I'm going to add so much more, and then I'm going to add so much more distilled water. Instead, what we sell then is we sell the refueling. Every 6,000 miles, you will have to refuel your fuel cell. And once that's done, it's always done back to the same exact level that it was prior, or that it's supposed to be maintained at.
Of course, that begs the question, what do you do with the leftover solution that's in the unit?
Well, then we take that back and recycle it.
Oh, you do? Oh, that's very good.
Yeah, so what we do is after 6,000 miles, we want to empty the unit out, recycle that. We know what's in there. We test it to know what's in there to make absolutely sure that we're still on the same number.
Sure.
And then we just refortify it so that we don't end up throwing away anything. I really am always been a... Every business that I own outside of the metal fabrication company that I own is environmentally related. How do I make everything better by what I'm accomplishing?
Yeah.
So this servicing will require an ongoing infrastructure of accessible service personnel for people who are buying the technology.
Absolutely. We're going to be setting up distributors or dealers within each town, which are going to be installing our unit, because this is not a novelty item. This is nothing that you're going to just pop under your hood and say, hey, it takes up the size of a fist or a couple of fists. Our unit weighs 100 pounds. It's the Gorilla is a large unit. And in order to accomplish what we're accomplishing, it can't be done with a small unit. And it can't be done consistently with a small unit. I've seen a number of the small units that are out there, and they're excellent technology. But their shortcomings are is that, well, let's see, electrolyte balance, plate spacings, grade of steel, how you're setting up your wiring schematics, and then, of course, you have volume. And these plates, commonly, ours are bathed in liquid 100% of the time.
Yeah,
so in other units that are on the market right now, you fill the unit, and it starts as it's using up the solution, the electrolyte solution, it will then start to expose more plate area, thus diminishing the effectiveness of that plate area. It no longer has any electrolyte solution in contact with it.
Yeah, it can't transform air.
No, no. If we could, we would be absolutely not worried about the oceans rising anymore.
Yes.
Well, let's talk about some of the other products that you have. You have a very fascinating situation for addressing weed killing and lawn nurturing.
Yes. I actually extract a protein from sugar beets using a chromatograph separation process where we take out a protein called trimethylglycine. I have a patent on that protein as a weed control within your lawn. This protein does not kill grass, cultivated grass species. It will attack crabgrass because it's not a cultivated grass species. It will kill quackgrass because it's not a cultivated grass species. It will kill broadleaf weeds, most of all broadleaf weeds. It takes longer to kill them than chemicals, in depending on the weed and the time of year. Some weeds we can kill within a matter of 4 to 6 hours, and they're just completely obliterated and gone. And other weeds are going to take, 4 to 6 weeks to die off, while the lawn is still undamaged and actually being nurtured and fertilized by these proteins. Now, we're legal. We're the only legal product to be used in all of the province of Quebec, because in Quebec they ban pesticides. Chemical pesticides are no longer allowed to be used in turf care. In Toronto, they've done the same thing, and now surrounding suburbs have done the same thing, and now Ontario is looking at using this ban provincial-wide again, so then we'll be the only legal product in all of the province of Ontario. In the United States, the Environmental Protection Agency decided to sue me over this and that I can't use it here. And so we went to court, and, of course, we ended up basically being at a stalemate where the judge couldn't understand why either one of us were going to fight this to this level, and was just annoyed with both parties because we allowed this to waste the court's time. What we're now working as, what the EPA and I have agreed to do, is try to work towards a solution where we can sell the product in the United States without restriction. What I want, what they would permit, is they want me to go and register the product as a toxic chemical pesticide, and I refuse to do that because it's edible. It's good for you. Instead, what we wanted it registered under was the FIFRA Act, the FIFRA Act, Section 25, paragraph, or Section 25, paragraph B, yes, where this product would be added to the excluded list of products that would not require a federal registration because there's no known lethal toxicity to the product outside of similar to water. So now, we hope that next year we're going to have that accomplished, and we're going to be able to sell the product in the United States as it is. Now, in addition to that, I have other products that replace Roundup. I have other products that replace regular insecticides. Almost everything we have works very close to or better than the chemicals that they replace, yet everything that we sell has to be edible or it isn't used. It has to be used in a human or animal food ingredient. So that's kind of our philosophy there.
And if you, I understand right, or by the way, is our caller still on?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Do you have a business website you could tell us for? It sounds like you've got a lot of work that you put into that.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's been over 20 years that I've invested into this. I was a former farmer.
I was asking the caller if he wanted to identify any website that he might have.
I'm just a retired auto enthusiast / manufacturing engineer who spent all his life in the American machine tool industry. And I found this particular science, it's just as much of an art as it is a science, and I found it fascinating, so I just gathered as much information from the Internet and the various Internet groups as I could and started building, and when something didn't work, I didn't use that again and kept on going until I found something that worked.
Well, I do appreciate you calling in and your interest in the subject and encourage your continued research.
Well, Mr. Miles looks like he's going to be introducing something great into the market. I also like the his products for the crabgrass, and if he needs somebody to test it down here in Florida, I'd be more than willing because Lord knows we got enough of it down here.
Oh, yes, yes, and the St. Augustine Bermuda grasses,
yeah.
We work awesomely in those environments. What I want you to do, especially you, I want you to identify yourself. Email me at info@gethydropower.com.
Okay.
Because I think you and I have an enormous amount in common here that can be a great advantage to possibly both of us.
Okay. Yeah, I'll send you an email.
All right. Thank you.
You betcha.
So, Mark, you've been at this 20 years. Which part of it, the weed killing or the hydro technology?
Well, actually, I'm one of those people that kind of have been developing a lot of products. I have over 250 items or claims patented at the moment. I quit patenting different items simply because I had such a leg up on the competition in different areas that there was no point in patenting them. And I was the inventor of the core ingredients, and the only place they could acquire them was through me. I had a company that was, I wouldn't dare say their name at the moment, but everyone knows who they are, a very large corporation, who then stole one of my patents and laughed about it and told my lawyers, after we had signed a non-competition agreement where they were going to start manufacturing my product and putting it through the product channels, that they decided that they were just going to steal the patent instead because I now gave them the information. So my lawyer called them and said, why are you doing this? And they said, well, we're big. You're not. Well, I have them in a court right now, and when we started to put them under deposition, their basic answer was that of a two-year-old with a hand in the cookie jar of, yeah, I know we tried to steal it, but we couldn't because he makes it, so we just lied to the public and told them that they are getting what we told them they were supposed to, but they don't. So we're guilty of consumer fraud, not stealing his patent. So that was their answer. It was rather humorous. I'm looking at a multi-billion-dollar corporation, very well known, that answered, and I swear they could have done it better if they would have done it in crayon.
We have another caller with a question. Go ahead, caller.
Oh, Sterling, this is Xenia.
Oh, hi, Xenia.
Yeah.
Go ahead and give us your quick little blurb.
Okay. This is about the global warming and what you can do to slow down global warming. So some hints on, I'm sure people know some, but there's some you don't. And particularly serious because this is depleting the very oxygen that we breathe. And here are some ways that you can make a difference in your home, in your yard, at the store, on the road, and everywhere. The average house is responsible for more air pollution and carbon dioxide emissions than the average car. So an individual can make a difference, and actions that households can do that reduce greenhouse gas emissions and also save you money on your energy bills. The average household spends 40% of the budget on heating and cooling the house alone. And you can reduce the bills by 15% just by replacing windows with Energy Star label products for the home. especially if you're remodeling or, you know, thinking of new constructions. Then other things you can do are buy energy-saving appliances. Energy Star Label is quite the interesting place to shop. They do have a website, www.energystar.gov, G-O-V. So you can learn a lot about the appliances and products from there. Another thing is lower the temperature of the hot water tank to 120 degrees. Insulate your home, hot water heater, and all the water lines. Because you all have been recycling pretty much, but that's crucial. And the new ideas by products that are made from recycled materials. And on the car, of course, keep tires inflated. And maybe if you're looking at a new car, consider the hybrids, because if you do live in the city and have a lot of stop-and-go driving, the hybrids, I guess, are a very great way to save on emissions. And plant trees around your house for increased shade, lowering carbon amounts, and restoration of forestry in your own backyard. And then another point is invest in green power for electricity. Again, there's another website, epa.gov/green power. The main thing, of course, is to educate, to learn more, study, talk to your family and friends. And I still encourage people to see the inconvenient truth. This information is on the website of An Inconvenient Truth or Climate Crisis. So we'll go more next week and more in detail some of these ideas.
Thank you, Zenya.
You're welcome.
I'm glad to be Mark,
yes.
Back to talking about this this earth-friendly weed control situation. You have a variety of products, and they are all edible. And you were saying that one of them people even take for certain maladies. They're finding improvement in some liver conditions.
Yes, the protein that we use to kill weeds in lawns is called trimethylglycine, and it's easily found all over the Internet on what this is. Now, years ago, this comes out of sugar beets, and that's the only place that it really comes out of. When I started with this, there was this product was being sold to me at $15 a ton, which was basically the freight. Please get it out of here. It's a waste. When we started to analyze this and use it in turf care, we discovered that we were killing weeds. Well, as we went back to American Crystal Sugar and Mindac, the different sugar beet growers in the Midwest here, they began to We told them what we had found. We started to, we got the Agricultural Utilization Resource Institute in the state of Minnesota to work with us. And we discovered exactly what was killing the weeds, because it was purely an accident. When I bought that material, I was simply buying it as a low-cost fertilizer ingredient, and it was aiding the farmers, of which the community I had just left. So I feel very strongly in supporting American farmers, or any farmer anywhere, actually. Well, as we applied this to lawns, we saw the weeds dying. We went through the University of Minnesota, we went through the Agricultural Utilization Resource Institute, and we identified the exact protein that was causing this weed to die. As we went through that, the EPA wanted us to register the product. So we ended up creating 13 volumes of toxicology studies that have been done or that we're doing on that protein itself. As a side result, instead of killing the rats or instead of killing the animals that we're told that we had to kill by the EPA, which I'm against doing this, but I understand why they want to have this done on different chemicals, but we were dealing with an organic product. Well, as we did this, we discovered that the animals were becoming more and more healthy and less obsessive-compulsive and less obsessive-compulsive disorder results, such as, let's say, smoking, alcoholism, overeating, anything like this for a human, anything that you're prone to do because you have a severe depression issue. As we started to identify this, it went further and further and further into discovering that it actually would take livers that were near replacement near having to have a transplant, and it would take them back and regenerate them. Now, that's now studies done by many accredited universities. That has nothing to do with us. We don't have anything to do with the technology on ownership of that technology. I relinquished that early on by complete foolhardiness because I was focused on killing weeds. And now it's discovered, and it's been being used in Europe outstandingly for depression issues and for different organs, internal organs that are having degenerative issues, and it will take them back and regenerate them and put them back where they belong. In addition, it's been known to cure arterial sclerosis. It lowers your cholesterol. I mean, it's been an amazing protein. It's been such an amazing protein that now they're trying to genetically alter different food ingredients or different agricultural crops to contain this protein because it would reduce the amount of medical care that everyone requires.
I have to tell you my little history and as to coming into this. The day before you phoned me last week, you were wanting one of those scan gauges to be able to test out some of this, these results that you were getting with this hydrogen production. I had written a letter to Treehugger, which is one of the news services that I subscribe to. They have a lot of great news, and I link to it quite often from our alternative energy news. And I sent them an email saying, could you do some research and do a story on some earth-friendly lawn care? You know, it's coming up here into the fall, which is the time to fertilize and to do some spraying. Give us some solutions that are earth-friendly. And lo and behold, the next day I get a phone call from you, and you give me your email address, and I ask you about that, and it turns out that you have this product that is exactly what I was asking Treehugger about.
Yeah, it's my whole life, I guess my whole family's life, has been generated around the environment. My father was a farmer. We also had a land drainage business, which to many people would sound automatically like that's anti-environment. What my father would do is we would identify farm fields that had ditches that would hold water long enough to make a tractor have to turn around and go back the other way and not cultivate all the way through, or that it would drown out or kill a crop, but it was never sufficient to sustain wildlife. So we went through and we would drain all of these little potholes or these little depressions and ditches in a farm field, and we would then drain them to a larger collection area where that would, as a collective amount of moisture, sustain wildlife year-round. So, and my father was an avid hunter. He loved to hunt. He loved wildlife more than he loved to hunt. He would raise and have 20, 30 acres of corn that he would leave up for the deer every year so they would not starve during the winter. He would go out into our lake and he would plant sago for the ducks so that the ducks would have plenty of food to live on while they were migrating. And he continually did this at his own expense. He stocked fish lakes with fish that was not permitted by the government. He would continually do things that were not. He bought land south of a town that we lived in, and it had a large ravine in there, and there were many deaths from people hitting deer. So they were killing people, they were killing deer, it just was a bad thing. So he went in there and he bought this land, and he built up a large dam in there, and he restrained the water back so that the deer wouldn't have to cross the road to get to the water. And when he did that, the DNR, which he always loved to call damn near Russia, they were all over him, threatening to put him in prison and everything, because he would continually make these wildlife habitats and make them sustainable so that they were better for everyone involved without their permission. So I guess I come from a long time history of environmentalism combined with fighting the government no matter who's in power. It's never been, for us, it's never been Republicans and it's never been Democrats. It's always been the bureaucrats. they're the ones who have been causing the problems. Mostly Democrats, Republicans agree in almost all issues anyway. It's 90% of all issues they seem to agree on, and 10% they have a major problem with. And if everyone focused on the 90%, I think the 10% would disappear anyway. Anyway, my political statement for the day.
Let's give out your web address for greenguardian.us.
Yes.
Where they can go to get your product, this edible biological weed control. I plan on being one of your customers there. You have 100,000 clients in the U.S.
Yeah, actually, it's about 100,000 in Canada.
Okay.
We're legal to use some of these proteins in Canada, and other products we're allowed to use in the United States. Now, the products that we're allowed to use here do not work as well as the ones in Canada, but they're not all that far different from their effectiveness either. We're getting them closer and closer. With time, with money, with more research, we've been able to go out there, spray your lawn, make it extremely green, and suppress or kill the weeds using other edible ingredients, which are still permitted by the EPA. We were just trying to get them to allow this individual protein to be used.
Right.
Out of one of the ingredients that they already say is okay to use.
Well, that's fascinating stuff. And also for the hydrogen technology, people can go to gethydropower.com to see your video in this coming week in this copious production of hydrogen, this unit that they'll be able to purchase for their vehicles. You do not yet have it available for retail, but you are doing some, what would you say, commercial one-on-one?
Yes, we're going to be doing a lot more commercial at the onset. And then as we get people to take the product on in different geographical locations where they can install them, monitor them, and make sure everyone is quite happy with the results, no matter what we do, we basically have a money-back guarantee. If it's not meeting with your expectations, if it's not doing what we told you it was going to do, we're going to give you your money back because it's not worth it. I want happy customers.
Yeah. Well, Mark, it's been nice talking to you. Appreciate you coming on and doing this show with us. And we wish you the best of luck in this venture that you've gone out on with a lot of different things. Thank you very much.
Yes. Okay. Thank you very much for having me.